within prescribed limits.
Broadcasting live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios.
The government and parents everywhere, they tried to ban it.
Welcome back to the George Plaster Show.
He's a fine man.
He's a great broadcaster.
Brought to you by Fort Durham Injury Law. Call George now at 615-844-5600 and online at WNSR.com.
He's a very powerful guy.
And now, here's the man, the myth, the legend, George Plaster.
A lot going on in our city tonight. The Preds are home at 7 o'clock against the Tampa Bay Lightning, one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. Round 2, Battle of the Boulevard, tonight from the Curb Events Center, Belmont and Lipscomb. Game 1, a couple of weeks ago at Allen Arena, Belmont won, but it was very close and a real struggle. And tonight, a Buffalo team that a year ago was on a real roll, and I believe ended up being an NCAA tournament team, they will be at Memorial Gym, 7 o'clock, to take on Vandy. Perfect segue to Chris Lee from VandySports.com, who joins us by phone. Chris, am I right? Buffalo did make the NCAA a year ago, didn't they?
I am almost sure. I'm checking that as we speak. And Buffalo did indeed make the tournament last year, beat Arizona State as a sixth seed before falling to Texas Tech.
And yeah.
Of course, there's been a coaching change since then with Nate Oates going to Alabama.
So, this is a pretty good little test tonight if Buffalo is halfway close to what they were a year ago.
It is, and I think the question is whether that's the case. Buffalo is, at this point, 5-2. It's lost to Dartmouth and Connecticut and doesn't really have a great win, although Harvard's an okay win, potentially an NIT-type team. But I don't think this will be the kind of Buffalo team that we saw the last 3 or 4 years. That said, a win for Vanderbilt tonight would be significant. They lost to Tulsa on, what was it, Saturday night. And Tulsa's maybe an NIT-type team. So it's a good litmus test for them, not one that's too much to bite off, but probably one that's about at their level right now.
Now let's go to football. And I know your reaction is, why? So, Chris, how does this get any better a year from now?
Well, the thing that I'm waiting for is what are they going to do with facilities? And I keep hearing this undercurrent of they've got an AD that has big plans. And these are my words. I guess I would paraphrase and not sources necessarily how they would put it. But it sounds like it's almost going to be, I don't want to see like a game of chicken, but okay, how much did you really mean this stuff about commitment when you hired me? That is, from a Malcolm Turner perspective. I think that he's going to challenge them. I think that he has big plans. I think that he has plans for things that he wants to do that dwarf everything they've ever wanted to do before. Now, I'm not talking about chocolate fondue waterfalls and water slides for players, but I'm talking about practical things that most people would agree, if you run a Division I in an FBS level college football program, that most schools have to be competitive, nicer stadiums, nicer player facilities. I think he's going to try to hold their feet to the fire and see how much he means it. And look, I think that Derek Mason's tenure has done almost incalculable damage. I think another year would continue to do the same. But you look back across history, to look at programs like Kansas State and TCU and Northwestern that have had, frankly, moments that are even worse than what Vanderbilt's had, that have recovered after investment and have built some pretty good things. And I'm not trying to give anybody a Pollyanna view of Vanderbilt football right now, but I am saying before everybody gives up hope, and there are people that I think that are right on that edge, and for all reasons that I would agree with, that's the thing that I'm watching to see how that resolves in the coming months.
Chris, in the end, the quarterback play of about 18 different people they rolled out there was abysmal, and it made Derek Mason look stupid because he was the one who put it out there that he had two quarterbacks who he was very comfortable with to compete at the SEC level, So is he that bad an evaluator of quarterback talent, or was he simply trying to blow smoke to sort of somehow get around a problem he knew existed?
I don't know. I did not get the feeling that he was disingenuous with that. I've said this before, I think, on podcasts that we have done, or maybe not, but the thing that I keep going back to is that Andy Ludwig believed in Deuce Wallace also. So that's two offensive coordinators that said they believed in him, and it just didn't happen. And look, at some point, the whys and the whats, the whys don't matter as much as the whats. And the fact is, Derek's been at Vanderbilt for 6 years now. He's developed one quarterback, and none of the others have really been that close to being adequate. And you look across the landscape of places. You look at number one draft picks at places like North Dakota State and Wyoming, where you had Carson Wentz and Josh Allen. And are those outliers? Of course they're outliers. But the point is, successful programs and successful coaches find a way to develop quarterbacks, and for whatever reason they haven't. And whether that's development or recruiting, again, the why doesn't really matter to me. What I look at is when they've been in charge of things, what have they done? They've developed one guy, and that's not going to get you very far at Vanderbilt.
Chris Lee from VandySports.com on the line with us. Watson, what do you got for him?
Chris, sticking with the quarterback situation, do you feel like that they've got to go hunt another transfer guy, or do you think the freshman that they're bringing in is good enough to play? Because they've got to change this offense immediately in early next year, because the schedule is not easy to start out. I think they got Mercer early. They got to go to Kansas State. So they've got to be in place early to be able to get six or more, which is, I'm sure, what the goal is or should be. And do you think they're going to have to go back outside again to hunt that guy, or do you feel like there's anybody there that's capable of really turning it around and being the guy?
Well, there's a couple ways to answer that. I think whether you're Alabama or Vanderbilt or whoever, you need three guys that you feel like you can play to some degree just because of injuries. I mean, you saw it in the Missouri game. They played, I guess, three quarterbacks and sort of out of necessity that game as guys got hurt. So there's that end. The other end is what are they going to have? And my guess is they will go into spring with Deuce Wallace and with the kid, Ken Seals from Texas, who's a pretty highly regarded recruit, doesn't have a great offer list, but lit it up in Texas and is pretty highly regarded by people who've seen him. Jack Bowen, who's the walk-on, who they never played this year, walk-on quarterbacks at Vanderbilt. I can't think of one that's ever remotely worked out. I don't know what the deal is with him, because we didn't get to see him a lot in practice, but he may be on the roster just as a space filler. And I think they're recruiting the JUCO ranks right now. We had a story on a kid out of California that they're looking at, whose name escapes me, that I don't have it in front of me. But and the Kate Fortin kid, who had signed at Carolina. I think they're still chasing him. He's looking at some other schools as well. So I think that they will have the two aforementioned kids who will come back. I don't know if Mo Hassan will ever play again because of concussions. And I say that, I truly don't know. I'm skeptical. But we'll see. But I think they will add one in the class that they're about to sign, who is Seals, and one other who will be determined.
And Chris, my second question is basketball. I'm really interested. How do you feel about the team? Are you surprised? Are they playing better than you thought? What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? How well can they do this year in what you've seen so far?
Well, I think I'm surprised. They're playing better than I thought. They're shooting better than I thought. They're more fun to watch than I thought. And I say always, consider the competition, because the step up is coming. It started to come. It came with Tulsa, and they did not handle that well. So we don't know what it's going to look like when it gets better, but all I can say is I've been encouraged based on what I have seen. I think this is a team with a superstar in Aaron Nesmith. It remains to be seen if they've got enough supporting parts to keep teams from just wearing him down. I've liked some things they've had at the guard play. out of Saban Lee and Scottie Pippen Jr. But again, let's see what happens when they bump up in competition. You know, last week was not good for those kids, so we'll see how they respond to that. I just don't know if they've got enough experienced, quality players. They've got a couple of freshmen. Dylan D'Souza's good, but he's a freshman. So to me, it is they've got a superstar. How do the building blocks around him assemble? How good are they when they take a step up in competition? I think we're about to find out this month.
Chris, you know, one of the things that I've been hearing, you know, just kind of a, I guess, rumors and things like that that are going around regarding football, is there some sort of grassroots boycott among the fans in regard to the decision over to retain Derek Mason? Because if that's the case, that seems, you know, to be something that would be even more divisive to the program than uniting. And certainly the Commodores right now can use all the uniting they can get as Mason tries to rebuild this thing and get it turned around.
Terry, there's been talk of it. I don't know how deep and organized it's going to be and even how many people are left to make a scene about it. I'll say this, and I don't mean to be smart alecky about it. I would say a boycott has been happening in stages since the Temple game of 2014. You had people that dropped their season tickets then that haven't come back, that have sworn they won't come back until they make a coaching change. You saw the attendance this year. You saw the ETSU game at the end of the year where I'm going to guess they had about 7,000, 7,500 people in the stands total, their fans in ETSUs. I mean, I think it has started, not officially, but it's been going on for years. Their attendance has gotten worse. And as George and I discussed on my podcast this morning, we both feel that what we saw this year was the worst attendance we've ever seen at Vanderbilt. So it may not have officially been called a boycott, but I think you can make a case that it's already happened.
All right, let's switch over to a little bit more of a warm weather topic. Let's talk baseball.
Thank you.
It made news the other day when a headline was put out there that the Vanderbilt baseball team had turned down an invitation to go to the White House. And, of course, that's a lightning rod subject anytime you inject politics nowadays into sports and things like that. But I think it took a little while, but I think the real reason finally got out there that it wasn't politically motivated on the part of Coach Corbin or the players. It just was simply for the fact that they had already told the players that they would be released and be able to go home and visit their families over the Thanksgiving holiday. And can you elaborate a little bit more on what Coach Corbin said about that?
You know, I don't know any more than what he said publicly. I think what you said is accurate. Those things were a lightning rod right now, and people want to jump on those to whether there's anything or not. And I don't know the truth. I'll just take Tim of his word. But to me, it's kind of a, I want to say a non-story, but it is what it is right now. People are going to see it for what they want to see it. And whether you know the truth or not, that usually doesn't change minds.
Terry, we done?
George?
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we are. Chris, anything earth-shattering you want to leave us with?
No, we continue to do the podcast, and I think deal with the issues. You've been a great help in that. And I think it's always important to know the history of Vanderbilt and how things got there. I think if folks haven't listened to the podcast, I hope they will. We do those 3 to 4 times a week. Usually do those with me on Tuesday, and that one's up already. I'll be at the basketball game tonight. We'll continue to cover that. Of course, we're starting with baseball coverage in the coming months as they prepare for the season. So, look, it is a brutally tough time for Vanderbilt fans right now. I think if you're at our site, we'll continue to report what we know and try to bring some good news with those other things happening. But anyway, I appreciate your involvement in the podcast, and I would encourage people
I've enjoyed it.
That if they not listen to those, that they will find it. You can find them free on our site at vandysports.com. We do have a host of paid content, but you can always find those on our homepage for free.
Excellent. As always, I appreciate your coming on here.
Thank you, guys.
Chris, thank you. Interesting stuff. So we've had a lot to chew on today. We've talked a little Vandy. We've talked a bunch of Missouri. We've gotten into coaching rumors. So here's what we have not done yet. We have not opened the phones for you all. So I want to hear what may be on your mind at a busy time in sports. Man, we got a lot of college football with all of the championship games coming, all the rumor mills around of it. Anyway, whatever it is you want to talk about, I simply ask you to hit the phones right now. 844-5600 is the number. If you call now, we'll get to you pretty quickly. Again, 844-5600. I want to see some phone lines light up from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios. You're listening to WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
His favorite bourbon, her favorite bottle of wine. Magic moments begin at Brinkman's Wine and Spirits in Brentwood. Whether hosting a party or just looking for a nice bottle of wine for dinner, you can't go wrong with Brinkman's Wine and Spirits, with an impressive array of wine and spirits to choose from. How many times have you been in a supermarket wandering up and down the wine aisle, getting more confused and frustrated by the minute? When you ask for help, they know less than you do. Tim Brinkman and the staff at Brinkman's Wine and Spirits will make you feel welcomed and appreciated. They have a passion for personal service to help you make the best selection for your specific taste and budget. The originator of local bourbon tastings, there's always opportunities to discover new spirits and wines. Looking for gift ideas? They can assist you with suggestions for all occasions. Rediscover Brinkman's Wine and Spirits, located at 7110 Town Center Way, just east of Franklin Road and the roundabout by the Brentwood Post Office. Good, better, Brinkman's.
I want you to listen really close to a message from the folks at ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis. Your credit reports are your financial report card. A good credit report is necessary to get a mortgage, car loan, and credit cards. Even getting rental housing insurance or a job is dependent on your credit report. Here's what blows me away. 40 million consumers have an error on their credit report, and 2 million of those are so serious they're likely being overcharged for mortgages, credit card debts, auto loans, insurance policies, and other financial obligations. If you want to know more about your credit report, I want you to contact Bill Kalutis at ShieldLawGroup.com or call Bill at 615-742-8020. ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis.
It's happening. Wherever plays are being made, tickets are being sold, and fans are lining up. ADP is designing a better way to work. With industry-leading HR, talent, time, benefits, and payroll, more companies rely on ADP than any other HR partner to help step up their game. From small business to global enterprise, see how ADP can help you and your people achieve what you're working for at design.adp.com. ADP, always designing for people.
Blair, what about my medical bills?
They'll all be taken care of through the settlement.
What about me?
You worry about getting better. Do what your doctor tells you. We'll take care of the rest.
What a relief.
Mark Durham, Injury Law, 615-242-9000.
Five-State Forecast. Your exclusive National Sports Radio WNSR Skyscan Forecast. This afternoon, we'll have a mix of clouds and sun with a high of 48. Partly cloudy tonight, low 32. Wednesday, sunny, high 56. Sunny Thursday, high 56. Utilizing the resources of the WeatherBug Network and National Sports Radio, I'm WNSR's meteorologist, Jim Rinaldi.
Sports Radio WNSR.
Follow George Plaster on Twitter at @GeorgePlasterTN. Now, back to the George Plaster Show on Nashville Sports Radio.
Okay, looking for a couple of more phone calls. I want to basically take the rest of the show from now until 4 o'clock and get some of your phone calls at 844-5600. I would like for you to come up with the topic that's on your mind. However, if you don't do that, I got a couple out there that might cause a little chatter. Anyway, 844-5600 is the number. If you'll call now, we'll get to you pretty quickly. Stan the Man, welcome.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing good. Hope you are.
Hey, Terry Watson, I've got a new nickname for George. Y'all aren't going to like it. How do you think it sounds, George? First place plaster.
Stan, it's got a nice ring to it.
Hey, okay, real quick. Matt Luke at Ole Miss got fired, and I don't know how much, but they said they think the little end zone episode of the, you know, the player, and I get it, but he's not that bad a coach. How do they plan on hiring somebody better? That kind of shocked me. I thought they might give him another year. Seemed like the players liked him and thought he'd done a decent job, but I don't know. I'm just wondering, and I'll listen off air. Thanks, guys.
Okay, let's start with this. I think one of the things that hurt him was that he suddenly had an athletic director who had not hired him. And that may have been, while not his fault, ultimately a big piece of his downfall.
Well, and I've also heard, don't know that it's true, but I've heard that they weren't the best of buddies. I think Keith Carter was there, right? He was the interim.
Yeah.
He wasn't a new guy they brought in.
Right.
I've heard they didn't have a great relationship through these years. And I don't know. It was a surprise to me. I didn't put him even on the major hot list, tell you the truth. I thought they would give him one more. They didn't even come close to a bowl. They would have made it. What would they have been if they'd won that game, 5-7?
Yeah.
I'm not sure they didn't drive down the road to Starkville for that ball game with him fired. I'm not sure they didn't drive back up the road to Oxford after the game and said, ooh, we're going to have to look at this now. And so it's not going to be easy. They've already got a recruiting class kind of in place. They're going to lose some of those. You always lose players when there's a change of coach. There's always some that go. And so I think they're banking on we're gonna do this for the future. It's not just next year, because I think they made it harder on next year to me, George, by letting him go right now.
Terry,
he's an alum too. He's an alum and played there. Was a center there and a good player. So I mean, it was a surprise to me. I'll have to admit.
Terry, you ready for a little of my cynicism?
Sure.
In the aftermath of all of the misbehavior that went on over the weekend, it does dawn on me that the officials are a little bit to blame, and you're going to say, how in the world could that be? I'll tell you how. Okay, these officials are not stupid. They know full well when they get Ole Miss, Mississippi State, that those two teams despise each other. They know full well that when they get Tennessee Vandy, that Tennessee's pissed off with having lost 3 in a row to Vandy, and that they're ready to sort of put their nose in the mud a little bit. They know full well in a lot of these rivalry games that trouble is just around the corner. And what it seems to me they have to do is at the coin toss, when they get the captains out there, that the lead ref needs to bring them all in and say, listen, if you think we're putting up with your crap today, think again. The first one of you that so much as looks at anybody wrong, we'll throw your butt out. We're not putting up with it. That's one way to solve it.
So you're basically saying it's sort of like the home plate umpire issuing a warning to both sides before the first pitch is ever thrown.
Yeah, when you see, you know, in the old days when you would see a manager get thrown out while exchanging lineup cards, that was normally a sign that an umpiring crew had had enough. I'm just saying,
that's one way
that you stop some of this.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think when you talk about these rivalry weekends, I think, you know, the officials have to be on, have a sense of a heightened alert, you know, that things that normally wouldn't go on in the course of a game might go on, and got to nip it in the bud.
To quote Channel 17, we would issue a code red.
Yes.
You like that, Watson?
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. I think that good officials, George, nip it early in games. poor officials that don't have control of games try to nip it later in games, and it's too late to nip it. Now you're going to have trouble. You've got to start. Games I've been in, the good officials, the first incident of anything. And I'm talking about any football game in the business today. You lay down the law early. And is this right or wrong? But I'm starting to see the officials in college let the end zone celebrations keep getting a little more and a little more. And when they first put that in, George, I thought it was too strict, and they wouldn't even let them. I mean, they could point their finger toward
right.
the sky, and they could get a penalty for that. And they've let it get a little bit more and a little bit more. And is that good or bad? I mean, did I don't think anything. I think this was planned by the Ole Miss receiver, and it just so happened. I'm not sure if he had scored and been in the end zone like that, he wouldn't have done it earlier in the game.
And if you want to take
– when he did it was awful.
And this is a little bit monkey see, monkey do. On the pro level, the celebrations have gotten crazy. For all intents and purposes, the Seahawks now have hired as their dance team their wide receivers. They put on a show last night that was hysterical.
Yeah, the NFL is, isn't it? And now they're doing it with all 11 dudes. They're about to run to the end zone and do something together down there. You're right, it's choreographed. But there's no doubt the Ole Miss receivers deal was choreographed. He knew exactly what he was going to do when he got there. And that's just too bad. And now he's going to feel really bad because it could have led to his own coaches firing. I mean, it's just unbelievable how far this one has gone. But I said it yesterday, George. Officials are so dadgum important. We want to get on them, but they are so important because it doesn't take hardly anything that could just start a riot. I mean, we've been so lucky. That one was lucky. I've been in that game. I know the feeling between Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I've been in it twice, and it is just – it is a war now, and I mean, it wouldn't take much for both benches to empty and both stadiums, both sides of the stadium to empty. And that's why I think the officials we get on them. But good ones, they control that early, and they just don't let it get to that point. And I saw in the Ohio State-Michigan game there were some pushing
oh, absolutely.
In warm-ups before they're even dressed. Out there, they're walking the field, and you know, like they do today, and throw around in their sweat tops and shorts or whatever, and I think they got that nip quick right there, and I'll bet you that crew said, "Okay, boys, got both head coaches, and said, this is it, no more. We'll have all of you thrown out of the game if this keeps up." So, a lot is on an official. That's why we need them, and. I was one of the worst, Lord. I mean, I'd get after them, absolutely. But I also know how important they are because they have control of these ball games. And I don't care if it's Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Texas, Oklahoma. I don't care if it's Vanderbilt, East Tennessee. It don't take much to let something get way out of hand and we get an ugly deal then.
Tony in Nolensville, you are up next on WNSR.
Hello, George and Watson, and hello, Terry. How are you, bud? Hey, George, I just want to give a couple of shout-outs, then I'm going to bring you up to date on the Austin Peay game. Shout-out to the Mr. Footballs of Tennessee yesterday, and one in particular, a buddy of mine, Tim Kutras, a buddy of yours also.
Yeah.
Well deserved, well earned. I hated that he tore his ACL, but bad break. But if anybody can overcome it, he will. I mean, what a great athlete that boy is. Comes from a good family. We all know that.
Yeah, I'm proud of him.
Yes, sir. And a second shout out is going towards the Austin Peay game. A big win up there Saturday. They've got an even bigger game, George, this coming Saturday. I did a little research looking at Sacramento University, and they're the number 4 seed, I think, and they this year beat Idaho Vandals, which is a FBS school, and also your buddy Herm Edwards and them only beat them 19-7 earlier in the year. So Really? He's got their work cut out for them. And if they can go out there and win that type of game and beat this, obviously, a very good football program, and come back with a victory, that'll be a telling sign, I think, where Austin Peay's program is at this time. So just wanted to give shout-outs on that. George, a couple of years ago, you might have seen the game. I can't recall it. But one thing out of curtail, Watson, you think about this too, and Terry, one thing that would get the attention of both sides during all this melee, what's going on as we're talking about these players getting out of control, you throw that personal foul flag against the whole team early, will anybody else that gets a personal foul during the game, personal foul penalty, they're gone. And if you put one on the whole team early, if sidelines get out of hand and referee calls that, you know, they throw it on the whole team. If they can't differentiate on who might have done what on the sidelines, you call that whole team out with a penalty. Next time that one player gets one during the course of the game, he's gone. And I think that's something that might curtail some of this stuff.
I like where you're going, Tony. I do.
And I think that right there is a step. And it goes along with what you were saying, George. Let them know up front. But if something gets out of hand, throw the flag, put it on the whole team, whole sideline. Next one gets one, you're gone. I'm going to hang up, guys. George, congratulations. I saw the other night that win. I went, I know what Thursday's going to be like.
You're darn tooting. Get ready.
All right, buddy. Thank y'all.
See ya.
George, that happened in a game.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think which game it was. Yeah.
It happened, and it nipped it in the bud. The official put it on the whole team. So if anybody got another personal foul, they were out in the game. And I can't remember which game it was.
Yeah.
But that did happen in a game this year.
Terry, it's all about discipline.
There was a ruckus before the game. Same thing like at Ohio State and Michigan the other day.
Yeah.
And I cannot remember which game it was.
Okay, one line open at 844-5600. Go ahead, Terry.
No, you're exactly right. It is all about discipline. And sometimes, you know, a lot of that stuff happens before the game even starts. There was a game that I was watching the other day. I can't remember who it was, but they were jawing back and forth even before the game ever even got going. They were jawing on the sideline, and I can't remember exactly who it was, but they had to kind of be separated and all, and that just kind of set the tone for the whole game.
Yeah, look, you know this stuff's coming, and a lot of it's silly. It's a lot of, you know, your mama this, and, you know, it always, mama always comes up in these discussions. John in Nashville, welcome into WNSR.
Hey, George, appreciate it. George, I know you're happy you're in first place, but the
I'm shocked.
Underdog pick. Yeah, I know you are, but the underdog picks are more entertaining when you're last. I just want to let you know that, so don't take it personally.
Right, you know, I've been told that. But
hey, John, I agree with that 100%.
Being last. It's the best when you're last, George. Don't kid yourself. But anyway. Question for you, George, real quick, before I had one quick question. Did David Williams give Mason the extension, or did Turner?
David Williams.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure. The other thing, too, I had a question. Maybe Watson can answer it more, being on the coaching side. I play another sports. I never was on the football side, but all of y'all can chime in. Take a guy like Charlie Strong. Obviously, was a very hot commodity. Tennessee wanted him. He turned it down. He's just kind of fallen from grace a while. And I was kind of wondering there's been other coaches that way. What happens? I mean, all of a sudden they're great, and then all of a sudden it collapses. And I don't know if that's just a combination of a lot of stuff. And then the other question I had is, Watson, I don't remember the time frame. Did you play against Pat Sullivan? I heard he passed away yesterday, and I'll listen off air.
Thank you. I hated it.
No, I did not.
Hated seeing that.
We're the same age. Pat was at Auburn when I was at Vanderbilt. Now, Pat coached with me. He was on our staff at UAB for, 10 years or so. So I've got a strong relationship with Pat in that way. And the other question John asked George, it doesn't take much for you to fall in graces now. I mean, the world we live in today has gotten, when we started paying these coaches all the money, it's always been quick, you can get one, but now they just getting them quicker and quicker and quicker. And a lot of these guys are getting fired and they're not even playing with the guys they've even, their whole team isn't even who they recruited yet. But it's just the way it is. It's what have you done for me in the last hour? And I think the Ole Miss deal is a great example of that, George. Like I said, I think they drove down the road and he's going to be their coach. They headed back up the road to Oxford and he's not going to be. And that's the way this works. And you got to be smart as a coach where you go because your time limit is not going to be what you might think it will be. And you better make sure you can win wherever you're going. And, guys, the way you win in football, you got better players than the players you're playing against. And if you're better than your opponent and you have better players, more than any sport, I think football's this way. If you've got the better players, you're going to win 90% of the time. If you don't, you're going to lose most of the time. If you're 50-50, you're going to play that team 10 times, you're going to be 50-50 when it's over most of the time. Football more than any sport, I think, and it's because of the physicality of the sport.
Terry, I went and looked it up. Pat Sullivan passed away Sunday, had fought for the last 16 years and fought hard against cancer. So our thoughts and prayers go out to the Auburn family on that.
George, he got cancer.
Absolutely.
While he was
I remember him when he won the Heisman when I was a little kid.
Go ahead, Watson.
Said he got cancer while he was in the middle of a season with us at UAB, and it was devastating for all of us when that happened. It was an open date, and Pat hadn't been feeling well, and he had a lump on the side of his throat. And he said, I'm just going to get this checked out. And
yeah.
2 hours later, he comes back, closes the door, tells me the news, and it's just it was devastating. But it was an unbelievable fight. I've never seen anybody fight and something like this like he did. It's been really, really hard.
3:41, we're going to go to the break. Keith will be up first, but I would love to get a couple of more callers because you all make for great topics and great conversation. 844-5600 is the number. You come up with the topic. We'll yap about it. And from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios, you're listening to WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
Were you scammed into signing a timeshare contract? And did you miss the part that said you have to pay for your great idea? Not only for the rest of your life, but when you're not here anymore, you get to pass this turkey onto your family for them to pay for the rest of their lives. Thanks, Dad. Don't burden your family down the road, and don't be stuck with expensive timeshare payments forever. Get out of your bad idea timeshare contract guaranteed or pay nothing. Call Resort Release today and learn for free how their timeshare exit team can help you legally exit your timeshare contract. They've helped thousands of people, and they're A-plus rated with a BBB. So if you feel scammed, get mad, and get out of your expensive timeshare contract right now, guaranteed. Call N-O-W.
800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. That's 800-898-0816.
My buddy James Warren is with me in studio, class of 1977, Battleground Academy, and owner of Sir Speedy, now Sir Speedy Music City. I know you've changed the name, but the service continues to be terrific.
We are the same people that you've come to love, and that's Sir Speedy Berry Hill is now Sir Speedy Music City. We did that just to be a part of the community that we're in and show our love for Music City. Even though we go all over the Southeast, we do most of our business here, and we love this city.
Phone number and the website.
615-832-9511 or SirSpeedyMusicCity.com.
Who was the company that heard the ad?
Donut Distillery over in East Nashville heard the ad and said, if you know George, then we'll do business with you.
Boy, that is scary. But here's the bottom line. You go in and see them, and when you do, you
tell them Plaid sent you.
Today we decided to walk to school. At the corner, we waited to cross the street. The stoplight counted down. 15, 14,
41, 31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Garden Street.
Loud music was coming from a car.
Danny's a smart kid, but he gets so distracted.
There were so many other sounds, I didn't know what to focus on.
Danny, Earth to Danny. Suddenly, he realized he forgot his homework again.
I left my homework on the table.
At the school steps, we hugged goodbye. I really hope he doesn't have another bad day at school today.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free online resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Get personalized recommendations, practical tips, daily access to experts, and more. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
As we watched the suburban garden gnome carefully without disturbing it, he noticed that it moves like not at all. It's inanimate and utterly without brain function. But despite that, when a garden gnome hears about how Geico not only saves people money, but also gives them access to licensed agents 24/7 online and over the phone, it's clear to them you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. But on second thoughts, maybe don't watch garden gnomes too carefully. People might talk.
Download the WNSR app from your app store and take the George Plaster Show on the go. From WNSR Nashville Sports Radio.
.345, and we welcome all of you back. I think those clouds Watson was talking about earlier have moved in. It's now pretty much cloudy, but at least better than it was yesterday when it was downright cold. Keith, line 3, welcome into WNSR.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm frustrated. I just wanted to ask Watson a couple of things. I've never been so frustrated as being a Vanderbilt fan than I have this year. And when Paul Houlihan, whatever his damn name was, when he was the athletic director here, what do we need to do to get the fans back in the stadium? Marketing or what? I'll hang up and listen. And Watson, if you knew that you had 1 year, would you let your assistants go to change things, or what would you do? I'm just asking. And I think that you deserve a couple more years at Vanderbilt. I'm just a big fan of Watson's, so I just want to listen. Thanks.
Ooh, a lot of questions.
Is he a family member?
Georgia. No. Noah.
Terry, didn't you think he was related?
It sounded that way.
Thank you.
Well, that's Keith over in Monterey.
Okay.
Oh, I'm just kidding. Come on.
All right. Don't be taking shots at Monterey in there, J-Boy. Man, great. He asked a lot. I think, George, we've talked so much about this, but in my personal opinion, what brings the fans back is commitment. They see all the things. They see Vanderbilt for the first time, and I mean first time. You would agree with this. Try to match the SEC in every way, and give your football program a true chance in every way. Salaries, everything around the program, facilities. Go for it. Either go for it or don't act like you're going for it and then just bring in another coach. I think that's the first thing the fans would see. Say, ooh, we're giving it a shot here. That's what I'm waiting on, and I hope that's the case. Second thing I think he asked, do you change – what makes you change? Do you change a lot of your staff if you think you're on your last leg? You change your staff when you think that it'll help you win ball games the next year. That's when you – change your staff, and that isn't always, the grass isn't always greener, but That's the true reason a coach changes, is he just feels like there's, if we're going to be better next year at this or whatever we're missing, we have no choice but to change. And George, I go back again quickly, and I don't want to talk the whole way, you guys, and let you too, George, because you got some strong feelings. I think scheduling is very, very important. Very important. And you've got to be very careful. They play the reason the Vanderbilt job is one of the toughest jobs in the country. There's a lot of private schools that are academic private schools, but Vanderbilt plays in the SEC. That's the difference. Those eight opponents you play in the SEC are just tough, and that's just the way it is. And so you got to make sure your non-conference schedule is doable. And it gives your football team a chance to win, gain confidence, play a lot of players, stay healthy. So many things can come in playing those first four games. If you could do it, I'd think you want to play the first four of the season. Kansas State did this and built a program, and Coach Snyder's going to be in the Hall of Fame because of it. He'd start every year 4-0. And then he'd jump into conference play, and he might end up going to a bowl at 6-6 or 7-5, and then all of a sudden it gets more and more and more. So I think it's simple. And my thoughts are this is a simple thing, but it takes a big commitment to pull it off, because if you're going to play Notre Dame for money, that's great. You're going to get money, but you're also playing eight other SEC teams. So I just don't think at Vanderbilt, George, that's a smart thing to do.
Terry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask Watson this. You know, he talked about having the commitment, and obviously, you know, I think we all agree that the commitment has to be there from the administration and from the fans. But when James Franklin was Vanderbilt's coach, did you sense that the administration and all got on board while he was there, or was it something that James just kind of did on his own, in sort of the same way Tim Corbin picked the baseball program up by its bootstraps and said, let's go?
Watson, can I start that one?
George, I wasn't around Vanderbilt much during that time, so you take that one.
He sort of bullied them into something better. They had no intention of building that indoor practice facility, and he just kept badgering the daylights out of them. I can remember going to a practice of his one day. I had called him earlier in the day to ask if I could go, because it was while I was sitting out between 104.5 and 102.5. And so he said, sure, come on. And I remember that day he just kept harping to me about this indoor practice facility, and I don't think they had any intention of doing it. And he just kept badgering them.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously whatever he did, it worked wonders, and it got results that, you know, they had not seen, you know, in a long time before that and have not seen since then.
Well, he had the kind of personality to force issues. Now, at the same time, he rubbed some people the wrong way. I don't doubt that he's pushed that envelope at Penn State, which is probably a little bit of why he's had this little rendezvous with Florida State. James is an envelope pusher. He's going to push the envelope as far as he can, and it ruffles people. Now, that's sort of the flip side. The other side is, based on his track record, you win.
Is there another guy out there who can do similar things at Vanderbilt?
Well, let me say this. I'm very biased in anything I put out there about Will Healy. Okay, so everybody's got to take with a grain of salt what I will put out there when I sound like his PR agent. He and I are friends. He is a relentless recruiter, just like James Franklin was. He is a tremendous fundraiser. He raised a lot of money for Austin Peay football that they're reaping the benefits of right now. But I think the difference is that Will did it in less of a bulldozer manner and he gets people in his court. He is a he's a guy that gets people behind him. Sorry about that. He just really he's kind of a coalition builder. Never thought I'd use that term. But that's kind of what he is. Excuse me. Let's go Doug up on line one. Doug, welcome into WNSR at 353.
Hey, I'm going to comment on the Vanderbilt situation, my own personal comment, and then I want to go another direction. I was born and raised in Nashville, Shelby Avenue area, and I can go down, remember going down West End, and the traffic was so good that you didn't even know there was a ball game going on. This is a decades-old issue, and I know you don't have to wonder what's going on. Look around. They're not doing what other people are doing. So I think that's not even a discussion that can be had by the public. Everybody knows. But I want to go another direction with the show today. You know, the big talk about signing Tannehill or the running back for the Titans. I think, personally, this is a business decision. They'll go to the highest bidder. I don't think he'll sign either one. They've both done a good body of work to show that they're valuable now. And I don't think Henry's coming back. I think Tannehill knows that this is his second go-around, and they're going to whatever they got to do to feed their family. And it won't be in Nashville.
Let me ask you this question, Doug, on where you're going.
Okay.
Isn't for Derrick Henry, I can see where you're going with Tannehill because, you know, he could probably go any number of places based on the last 6 weeks and do well. But for Henry, this is the one place he knows he is absolutely the man. He's what the whole offense is built around.
But you have those stupid teams like Oakland Raiders that will throw a boatload of money at you. And many other players went out there to flourish their career and never win a Super Bowl or anything. So I just think he's going to go to a team like that that's willing to just throw a pot of money.
Terry? Take it from there. Well, Doug, thank you.
I kind of agree with you, George, that Henry is probably a better fit here than he would be anywhere else. Now, that said, he's not going to come cheap because I think he knows his worth. I think he knows that he's probably a top three or four running back in the NFL, and he's going to want to be paid like it. And who can blame him, because running backs have a shorter shelf life traditionally than almost any other position in the league. And as far as Tannehill, you know, we talked about this yesterday, and Watson brought it up that he thinks he could go out there to the highest bidder. I think, you know, the situation with Tannehill, you know, if the Titans are smart with both these guys, I think they start that negotiating process sooner rather than later. You don't want to give those guys the opportunity to leave if you feel like they are part of your long-term future. If you feel like that for the next 3 or 4 years, they're going to be the foundation of what you're building the offense on, I think you have to find a way to keep both those guys around. Now, you could use the franchise tag or something like that if you needed to. And there is apparently a clause with the CBA that is going to expire after the 2020 season. Normally, a team can only use a franchise tag or a transition tag. But in the final year of the collective bargaining agreement, if no new extension and no new agreement is in place by the time the league year kicks off, you can use both of them. So conceivably, they could apply the franchise tag to one and the transition tag to the other and keep both of them off the market. Now, that would be kind of a desperation type of move, and it would certainly tie up a lot of cap dollars, but they could pull it off.
Great info. Let me go to Vandy Lance. Lance, I got about 90 seconds, and I'm sorry, that's all I've got.
That's all I need. First of all, once again, you have found out from yet another fan that has called in. When I tell you that you were so loved so much at Vanderbilt, it's no joke, pal. And he brought up the H word, George, the old Houlihan. Don't worry, Coach. When he got rid of you, I went to bat with him, and George went to bat with him, and he also let maybe the best basketball coach in the history of Vanderbilt University get out of there too. But he's when he turned Watson loose is when we started losing fans out of the stadium. 5,000 pop right there with Watson, and it's gone down ever since. Thanks for taking my phone call, and I told you, we love you, Watson.
Thank you, Lance.
Tomorrow we'll have more of Watson Brown, This Is Your Life. Whoa, come on, Watson. That was funny.
Oh, it was a bad thing. Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. We've had a good show today. I want to thank all of the callers who have gotten involved and participated. This is what makes it fun oftentimes is when you take a couple of segments and just sort of find out what you all are thinking. Because one of the great things I have learned is oftentimes you all will bring up stuff that we never thought of. Tomorrow on the show, I will ask the question, are Ohio State and LSU in, even if they get beat over the weekend? For Watson Brown and for Terry McCormick, George Plaster, thanking you for being with us. And stay tuned, Johnny Ballpark Franks is in the on-deck circle.